Now, over the past few days, we have had local school principals in to go through measures being taken in their schools as they get ready for the return of students after a six-month break. And I'm delighted to say that joining me now is Príomhida of Gaelscoil Corán, Catriona Nearida. And you're very welcome, Catriona.
Thank you, Linda. Good afternoon, Linda, and good afternoon, everybody.
Fair to say, I think it's been a rough few months.
Oh, absolutely, Linda. It has been a difficult and a challenging few months for parents, I would say, for staff, for everybody in the main. However, I think there has been a great spirit of collaboration, you know, with all of the different partners in schools. Schools close, as you know, Linda, on the 12th of March, which is quite a long time away. Normally, we would consider a summer holiday stint to be a long time, but this is quite a long time to be away from schools and from the routine that school brings. But it will require a lot of collaboration on the part of all of us to get back up and running once again. But I'm confident that we will, hopefully, with everybody involved.
Now, yesterday, parents would have received via the Aladdin app a detailed letter about the changes and precautions that have been taken by the school before the kids come back on the 1st of September. And I have a copy of it here in front of me. I think probably the best way to do this is, I suppose, is to walk through what a typical day now looks like, so that parents know what they can expect. So let's start with the drop-off times. What's the new protocol when parents are dropping their kids off?
Okay, so I suppose, Linda, what we have decided is to go over a 30-minute stint. So from 8:30 to 8:40, that the parents of the surnames A to C, that those parents would drop their children. I suppose in order for this to work, it would be important to have the children in the car and almost as close as possible to the school for 8:30 so that we can get everybody in. We would ask, however, that parents wouldn't park near the school. That's now a residential parking completely, and we can't park in the bus stops, but maybe to park down at the quays or at different places, and that the children would walk up to the school. So that's all the surnames from A to C. Then from 8:40 to 8:50, we have the surnames from D to M. And then from 8:50 to 9:00, the surnames from N to Z coming into us. I suppose our thinking behind it, Linda, is threefold, really. Number one, we feel that by the parents dropping the children off according to the surnames, it's one drop off only for the parents. So this should try to alleviate a lot of stress and pressure on parents in the morning, trying to drop children off at different times, because we are in a different location to many other schools, being on a one-way street, and it's quite narrow. I suppose, secondly, we're working hard with the community, and the community, we hope, will work hard with us. So as a gesture of goodwill, we don't want to back up the whole area down by the school on that one-way street with traffic. So this is another measure to hopefully try to alleviate that. And I suppose the third thing is it should help to facilitate social distancing and to limit the interaction of the children with other children as well. So that, I suppose, if we had a case or a suspected case, that we would be looking not only at the pod and the classroom, we'd be looking at who they would have come in with in the morning only.
Catriona, what happens if a child happens to miss their slot?
Yes, and that can happen. I suppose, Linda, the message we would try to get home to all parents and guardians would be to try insofar as possible, and that everybody would try their level best to ensure that they would be there for the spot for the allocated slot. Because I suppose coming in on the first slot, we have roughly 100 children. The second slot, we have about 90. And the third slot, we have in excess of 100 as well. Families, I suppose, I should say, coming into us. So it would be extremely important that people would try and maintain the spot that they have. However, I suppose it can happen. And if a person is late and if they do miss their slot, what we would ask is that the parents would observe every effort in terms of social distancing, that the children wouldn't just be left run in, that maybe that the parent would walk up to the gate with the child, ensure social distancing. If you see a group of children going in ahead of you, let those children in, and we will have teachers and COVID officers on the yard, so there will be a visible presence. What I would do maybe, I think it would be a good idea maybe just to get the attention of one of the COVID officers. They will have high-vis vests on them. It will be one of our SEN teachers or SNAs. Just politely mention that your child has missed their slot, and they will try and ensure that the coast is clear in terms of social distancing for them. I think that would be the best approach. But the best approach of all, of course, is to try insofar as possible to make the slot.
Absolutely. Now, if it so happens that your child is allocated a slot that may not suit you for work reasons or whatever, if they contact yourself in advance and let you know of that, could you accommodate them in that sense?
I suppose, Linda, we would always, in many scenarios, we would always try and accommodate parents insofar as possible. But I suppose this scenario is a particular scenario, and it's a very, very different scenario. And it's a bit like, if you remember the Kerplunk game, whereby you'd pull one of the straws and the whole lot of the marbles would begin to fall. So I suppose if we start that process of trying to facilitate one, where do you stop with it? And we always, and I place a strong emphasis myself in everything that I do in terms of fairness and trying to, I suppose, meet the needs of as many as possible. But it's something that I feel that we couldn't accommodate, because many, many people would have different reasons why a particular slot wouldn't suit them. I completely accept that it's difficult on parents if people are trying to be at work for a certain time, or trying to get children up to a post-primary school, or maybe children to a creche or babysitting. There are many, many different factors for parents to consider. But this is something we have discussed in our in-school management team. While we would love to be able to accommodate people, the reality is that it would become almost impossible. And it would completely break up the dynamic that we have going at the moment. And there's a very solid reason behind the system that we have going.
And that's very important to say from the outset, isn't it?
I think it's important to be honest with people. This virus knows no bounds, you know, and it's important for all of us to understand that. And it requires sacrifices beyond measure from all of us. It requires the collaboration and the goodwill of all of us. And I suppose one of those greatest sacrifices there is definitely in the morning, in terms of trying to meet a slot. And then I recognise completely that parents then have to try and maybe get other children to different educational settings, or maybe to childminders, to creche, maybe to a post-primary. As I said, parents have to go to work themselves, etc. So it's a difficult one, but it's one of the greatest sacrifices, I think, that we would be asking of people. Everything else during the school day, we will do our level best to facilitate it and to try and make sure, insofar as is possible, that it works, you know, but that would be the greatest sacrifice we'd be asking of people.
Typically, parents of kids in the Nínán Beaga and Nínán Móra, they would have walked their children, because they are younger, to the classroom. Does that still happen, or is it now a teacher bringing those children to the classrooms?
Well, I suppose, Linda, the guidelines that have been issued and the roadmap, they clearly state that schools would do their level best not to have visitors into the yard. And again, this is to protect everybody. We love having parents into the school, and Curramid Fáilte Mór Rompa, we always welcome them with open arms. And it's one thing that the school has always embraced is parents and welcoming them. It's lovely to see parents, we'll say, gathered in the little shed at the back, and they're having their little chat before they collect the children, and there's a nice social aspect to it. However, I suppose it's not something, again, because of this virus knowing no bounds and of our obligations to try to protect everybody, because it's a large school. It's not something, I suppose, that we can allow to happen. But as I said, I have detailed clearly to parents what we can do. So for the incoming infants, the first week and a half, the parents will be coming in at 9:30 with the children. Now, initially, we looked at how can we facilitate in some way those incoming infants and their parents, because it was always lovely for the parents to be able to walk down into the school to see the classroom, even for the first week and a half or so. So the best that we can do is that people at a social distance with a face covering on, that they would enter the side door of the hall, assume a spot in the hall that are going to be maybe 2 metres apart or so with their child, and they'll be greeted by the class teacher and by other members of staff and myself, and then gradually we'd let the children go down with the teacher and the parents would head away. And for the senior infant students, the parents can bring them to the gate as they would with the other siblings, and a member of staff will take them down to their classes. So again, we're trying to protect everyone, Linda, I suppose, in this. It seems like a cruel measure, the fact that we can't. But I think and I hope that people understand that we are trying to protect everybody. And, you know, we will be expecting the goodwill of parents as well.
And that's very important. I mean, this will only work if everybody rows together. I mean,
absolutely,
parents,
Linda,
have an obligation as well.
And parents have been fantastic. The great credit is due to the parents of Gaelscoil Corran and to the staff. I saw it firsthand myself when this whole, I suppose, area began to kick off in a big way the end of February, start of March, when we closed on the 12th of March. And parents, staff, everybody, fantastic credit is due to them for the way in which they embraced the distance learning. It wasn't easy on parents. You were uploading one minute, you were downloading the next minute, you know. So, Linda, it was a difficult task. People were learning skills that they maybe didn't have or maybe were a little bit rusty. And we saw a fantastic community spirit within the school. And I want to thank the parents and thank them sincerely, and the staff and the students, of course. And again, we're hoping that that will continue.
Finally, just with regards to the drop-offs before we move on to the next topic, if it's raining, what happens? Because that will be, and it, as you know, we live in Ireland, it happens,
yes,
an awful lot. If it is raining, what happens with the students? And are they brought straight to their classroom? But where do they gather after,
yeah,
that?
Well, Linda, I suppose the measures we have put in place, no matter whether you have a fabulous summer's day or whether you have Storm Ellen outside, all children are actually going to the classrooms now. So we can no longer facilitate the children lining up in the yard or playing in the yard for that 30 minutes before school would start. The reason being, I suppose it's important to explain, is that we have now divided the yard up into the specific zones. So children would have to cross different zones so as to access wherever their class would be. And the departmental guidelines clearly state that no class can mix at any stage, even in the yard. So I suppose there's a massive obligation on us, one that we are more than willing to meet, in terms of ensuring that the children don't mix from the different classes. So this is the best solution we have. And I have detailed to the parents there, Linda, the different entrances that the children would come in depending on where they are, and that's based on the geography of the school. It's on one of the appendix that I sent out. A little booklet will go out to parents tomorrow or Monday, and we hope to do a video as well next week just to show people.
Brilliant.
You know, picture paints a thousand words.
Absolutely. I think,
yeah,
the visual side, particularly for children, is so
Certainly.
Important.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've moved from the drop-off point. We're now in the classrooms. What has changed with regards to classroom organisation, hand sanitisation and all of that?
So I suppose the way classrooms are laid out generally nowadays may be very different to maybe, Linda, when you were in school, and certainly when I was in school. Classrooms are generally laid out in groups anyway, so that has been quite helpful to us. The difference being that the children are now, they will still be in groups, let's say four groups in a class. We now call them pods. The Irish word, we call them nádacha, which are like nests. We just have to ensure that each of the groups are 1 metre apart, and that the children only now stay within that pod or group. So that's a change or a deviation, because children like to mix, they like to socialise, especially before class would start. They like to maybe wander to the next group and have a little chat, etc. and all that. Or maybe they might want to help a particular child who was having difficulty, and a teacher might ask them, you know, to move to another pod. But that can't happen, and we can't allow for that. Now, this places quite a lot of an onus on the classroom teachers as well, to try and ensure that the pods aren't mixing. And as I said, we have a very diligent and conscientious staff, and I know that they will do their level best, but nothing will be perfect. I mean, children will be children. And, you know, the most important thing is that we stay calm with them, that we teach them rather than constantly correcting them if they do something wrong, that we just acknowledge that, look, this what needs to be done. The hand sanitising, we would be asking all parents that the children would wash their hands prior to coming to school. But we have a strict regime that once they do enter the classroom, that they would wash their hands at the wash hand basin, where there will be soap and there will be paper towels. And we'll say before they go out to break, they would have hand sanitizer on their hands. Again, after break, when they come in, they will wash their hands. Again, before big break, they will use hand sanitizer. When they come in after big break, they will wash their hands. And again, they will use hand sanitizer in the evening. So there will be quite a lot of an emphasis, Linda, placed on hand and respiratory hygiene.
Which is hugely important and has been proven to be one of the most successful techniques of keeping this virus at bay is your hand sanitizing.
Absolutely.
And your social distancing.
Yeah.
Will teachers be required to wear a face covering in the classroom? Is that something that has to happen or does it need to happen?
Well, I suppose the guidelines, and again, and I suppose guidelines are one thing, Linda, but common sense is another thing. And then I suppose you have to have a certain understanding of the medical ground surrounding a virus, in that if teachers can maintain a 2 metre distance from the children, so all of the teachers are in this week and next week on different days trying to sort their classrooms. If their desk can be 2 metres from the children, well, in that case, the teacher isn't required, they're not compelled to wear a face covering or a visor. However, there are many scenarios where a teacher would have to be maybe in closer proximity to a child. If I gave you one example, for example, if you notice that a child down the back of the room is quite sick or quite ill, you're not going to ignore that, you know, and teachers by nature are very caring people. You're not going to ignore that. So a teacher would put on a face covering or a visor before attending to that child. Some teachers will opt to wear them, especially if they're working in closer proximity to the children, maybe SEN teachers, special educational needs teachers. And we have 4 SEN teachers, so all of their rooms will be equipped with the Perspex as well on their tables. And they will wear them if they are in closer proximity to the kids. All of our SNAs will wear face coverings and visors because they would often be in closer proximity as well.
Now, if a child does happen to feel unwell in the classroom, what happens at that point?
Yes, and this is, Linda, and as every parent out there knows, you know, children, you know, this happens on a regular basis in schools where children have a tummy ache or they feel sick or a headache and different things like that. I suppose if we started before the children come into the school in the morning, if a parent notices that their child isn't feeling well, it's extremely important that they wouldn't send their child into school. And this is something that I would really emphasise. I suppose, Linda, you and I were probably brought up whereby you went into school unless you were very, very bad, you know.
The leg would have to be hanging off, Katrina, before you get a day off
in
my house.
And it was similar in our house at home, basically. You'd want to be fairly bad, you know what I mean? But what I would say is that can no longer happen, and we don't expect that and we don't want that. So we would be sincerely saying, and I would be pleading with all parents out there, I accept it's difficult because it may upset a work schedule or routine or child minding, and there are many other factors it may upset, but the children should not be sent into school if they're not feeling well. However, it can happen, Linda, that when a child is in school, they might have come into school feeling okay, that when they are in school that they may feel unwell. And normally, I suppose, and I know this is a class teacher myself, when I was teaching, you would kind of, you'd assess it, you'd use your best judgment. If you really, really felt that it merited a call straight away, we would request our diligent secretary Anya to do so, which she would do within seconds. Or else you might just assess it and you might use good judgment and you'd say, look, we'll see how you are after break, because the teacher sometimes might be aware of something that might have upset the child or caused this tummy ache, or might, you know, you get to know your students very, very well. It might be that they might have had a small little dispute in the yard amongst friends. It could be anything. So and then if the child wasn't feeling well, you would normally, more often than not, you would ring the parent, and the parents are very good. They would come and collect the child. Now, that can no longer happen. So if a child mentions to a staff that they're not feeling well, of course, the staff will ask a few, I suppose, basic questions just to ascertain, you know, is it an earache or is it something that could be possibly related to COVID? And in that case, then the lead worker representative, which would be myself in the school, one of the teacher in the classroom would contact me or the secretary, and in as discreet a way as possible, Linda, and this is very, very important because I don't want to create any angst or fear that's unnecessary out there. I would tap on the door and the teacher would send the child out to me. I would maintain the 2 metre distance, obviously have a visor and a mask and gloves on, and we'd have an isolation room, which is our prefab out the back, whereby the child would wait with me, and in the meantime Áine would have rang the parent to collect the child. Now, it might seem extreme, but it's not really, because we're not doctors, we're not medics, and it's extremely important that we protect that child and their family and the entire school community, and that we don't presume or assume anything. And then we would be asking the parents to contact their family GP, and the GP then, we would it would be taken from there then, you know. So I suppose it's important to, put that message out there, that children are not sent into school if they're not feeling well. The same with staff, Linda, that if a staff member isn't feeling well, that they wouldn't come into school as well.
And again, that's very important as well. Just a quick question that I know parents will pop into their head when they hear about the isolation area. What happens if there's more than one child has to be in that isolation area? What happens then?
Certainly. So if it was a case that there was more than one child that would need to be in the isolation area, in that case, Linda, we would have to use, we'll say, a section of the school hall. You know what I mean? Because the school hall is actually quite large. And that's something we have given thought to. We would have to use a section of that as well. And obviously, the correct cleaning measures, deep clean, would have to take place of both environments very shortly after the child was collected. Do you know, and that is possibly something that will happen. Do you know,
important to get out to parents as well, I suppose, that you're aware of that and you have planned for that.
Yes, and again, we don't have all the answers, but I think we will be learning an awful lot, Linda, as we go along with this. And it's very important that we would admit that, and that we would put our hands up and say that we will follow guidelines, and so far as possible, we will do our level best to keep informed and to exercise good judgment, common sense, and be aware of all that this virus brings, and so far as is possible, protect the children as best we can and staff. But at the same time, that I don't think anybody knows all the answers, and there are lots of unknowns, but we're hoping that we learn an awful lot in the process, and through, I suppose, regularly tapping into the expertise of all staff, and parents will inform us as well, that hopefully as a school community that we can, you know, become more educated regarding this and better ways of dealing with it.
Absolutely. Now, God forbid, if there happens to be a case of COVID-19 in a particular class, does the pod then have to quarantine, or is it the whole class would have to be considered that would have to quarantine, or what happens in that scenario?
Well, I suppose in a scenario like that, Linda, again, we would have to be guided by the HSC. So when the parent would contact their GP, it would be extremely important. Two things would be extremely important: discretion and confidentiality, number one. And you know what I mean, that that would be maintained, and general data protection as well, that it doesn't go out. And I would be appealing to everybody not to use social media in terms of, you know, speculating about maybe a suspect case or a case, etc. I would just ask everybody, you know, because, you know, everybody has feelings and their families, and this can be a sensitive topic, and it's something we don't want to make any more difficult for anybody. So in that case, once the family would contact their local GP, and the HSC would then make contact with the school, and they would advise us then as to what to do.
Are the classrooms, are they deep cleaned every day, or what's the cleaning routine for the classrooms?
So, Linda, yes, the at present, I suppose, going back into the school at this stage, the school has been thoroughly cleaned. So we would have all schools would have been given a grant right up until Christmas. And then it will be reviewed after Christmas by the Department of Education and Skills. The grant is to cover extra hours, extra deep cleaning hours. So in our case, we have somebody who will come in for 2 hours during the day and 2 hours at the end of the day, as well as our cleaner and caretaker who at present. And I suppose the main job there would be when six of the classes are out at break time, that those classrooms would be you know, cleaned, surfaces would be cleaned, and the railings and handles of doors, the toilets, you know, and the wash hand basins. And then when the other six classes would be out, because the breaks are now staggered as well, that those classrooms would be attended to. It's worthy of mention as well, Linda, that our Parents' Council have been fantastic in terms of supporting the funding of two fogging machines. I don't know if you've heard of a fogging machine.
I've
Linda.
Seen them in action. Yeah. they're quite powerful, in fairness to them.
So they're the idea of the fogging machine is it's a machine that you put 5 litres of water into, you put 150 millilitres of an antiviral disinfectant, and the person administering it, who would be the cleaner, would you simply stand in the middle of the classroom. You move it from left to right. It casts out ions and a mist that will, a light mist that goes 5 metres in all directions, and it completely disinfects and cleans the whole room. It's hard to imagine that, you know, you have to, even when you see it in action, you don't see anything happening. As I explained to someone, Linda, it's like a power hose. When you're power hosing, you can see the dirt coming off the wall, and you get, it's almost therapeutic. You begin to see the cleaning aspect as you go down the wall. But with this, you don't see it, but you just have to trust with the science and the theory behind it that it works. So we have purchased two of those, Linda, to be used at different stages throughout the day and in the infant classrooms to clean toys that might be used. Hard toys. We wouldn't, any of the softer toys, unfortunately, like teddies and that, we're not going to put those out for the children to play with.
Yeah. Now, on to PE and playing outside. What's going to happen with PE now?
So the PE is an area that I suppose that the children absolutely love in the school. And I'm sure you do as well, Linda, and many parents. PE has fantastic benefits for children, not only physically, but emotionally and mentally as well. And there is a massive emphasis at the moment on the wellness of the children. And as a school, we will definitely be attending in a big way to that once the children return. And PE massively feeds into that as well, and being actively involved and the social aspect of it. However, it has certain restrictions now placed on us, in the sense that if the children are indoors, they can only, let's say if a class go to the school hall for PE, well, they have to be within their pods as they do the exercises or do the activities. Now, that would not be the normal. Normally, when the class would go to the hall for PE, the whole class would mix and the whole class would play whatever game it was, be it uni hockey, be it basketball or whatever it was. So if it's indoors, they have to go according to their pods. But if the teacher decides to take the class to the yard, and if there isn't another class out in the particular zone that the teacher is using, then the class can mix. So what I would be encouraging certainly is hopefully we'll get September dry, and we'll pray for a good October and for more, if possible, that the teachers hopefully will take the children. And I know that the teachers will do their level best as well to try and ensure that the children, you know, are involved in PE, because it's important, and they will take the children to the yard in circumstances and insofar as is possible. But obviously, if you have a wet day, or if their designated PE day is wet, or if there is somebody else in the yard, there are many activities that they can do indoors in the pods. And there are, you know, the Move Right Now, for example, is a fantastic PE resource. There are loads of PE resources that Go Noodle, different PE resources that the teachers have a wealth of experience with. And again, we have a staff meeting next week where that is one of the topics of conversation, as to how we can best attend to PE. Now, the use of equipment then is another question, Linda, in terms of if the children are using equipment, we have to make sure that after they use the equipment, that equipment is deep cleaned and that equipment is cleaned down. So I suppose the less equipment that is used, the better.
Speaking of PE, uniforms and tracksuits, they're going to be alternate days, aren't they?
Yes, Linda. Yeah, I suppose the thinking again behind this is it's twofold. Number one, the children have the uniform, they have the tracksuit. Everybody, insofar as is possible, is uniform in terms of how they are dressed. I suppose the COVID can last on clothes, you know, for a certain length of time, but it's hoped that maybe after a day or so, that if the clothes aren't worn, that you know, that they would be COVID-free headed to be on the clothes. The idea of the uniform and tracksuit, moreover than the children wearing their own clothes, is to try to support parents and to assist parents as well. Because, you know, I suppose, Linda, when the children reach the older classes, brands supersede any other type of clothes that might be out there, and children become fixated with particular brands. And then in the younger classes, children being children, mammy or daddy has picked out a nice guna in the morning, or a nice pants or something, and maybe the colour or whatever doesn't suit in the morning, depending on the mood. And then you don't want tantrums, and you don't want parents who have many other commitments in the morning and have all this difficulty before they ever start the day. So we said, you know, if we have the uniform on one day, if the uniform is hung up when they go home, maybe hung out in the line if it's a nice day, maybe steamed if parents have the time and have a steamer to do so, washed preferably, but we completely understand that that's not going to be possible, and with Irish weather you don't always have the weather to be hanging them out. But again, that is a decision that parents are to make themselves, but certainly if they're hung up or hung out in the line and then used again on the next day. So the way we have it, Linda, is Monday is a uniform day, Tuesday is tracksuit, Wednesday is uniform, Thursday is tracksuit, and Friday is uniform. But once we have the PE times to know, teachers will collaborate with parents themselves.
What is the protocol now with parents picking their children up?
During the day, Linda, is it?
Yeah, let's say at the end of the day, classrooms are finished, we're yes. 20 to 3. How do they go about picking their children up?
Okay, so I suppose there's two areas to the pickup. There's the formal pickup at the end of the day, and then there is, let's say, if a child has a dental appointment or has some appointment during the day. So I suppose if I start with those ones, during the day ones that can happen, we would that the parents would make an appointment, you know, through the school office, just to let the secretary know that they have to pick their child up at such and such a time for a particular reason. We would ask that they would buzz at the front door. Anya will release it, that the parent would use the hand sanitizer, that they would fill out the contact log for us for contact tracing purposes, and that they would wait inside the door of the hall just straight opposite my office until Anya, until the child is sent down to the parent to be picked up. That's during the day. Then if it's at the end of the day, so the infant classes, we'll say from 20 to 2, they would be finishing. So the three infant classes, it has been detailed there in the note to parents that went out to parents, they will all stand at different exits. So one will be at the front door, one will be at the side door to the right, and the other at the side to the left. The parents of the younger classes will assume spots in the yard. So the spots will be, because it's outdoors and because we want to try and put as many spots as we can at a social distance that's acceptable in the yard, maybe a metre and a half apart, the parents would stand and the teachers will release the children one by one to the parents, and then the parents are asked to leave immediately, and we would put a strong emphasis on not hanging around outside the gates and the railings of the school, because again, it's not going to support social distancing. It won't be helpful if we had to contact trace, and it's something we want to teach the kids that, you know, that we wouldn't do. So once all of those children are released to the parents, and that has been detailed in the note, it should go from maybe 20 to 2 to 10 to 2. That with all the infants are gone then at that stage. Then when it comes at the end of the day to the older kids, the students in first and second class, initially we thought about letting them out class by class with all the other classes, that they would all leave through the main gates, and that they would walk to the mall or to the side that's closest to the lighthouse or wherever their parents are parked. But we realise that we appreciate that the younger children are still quite young in first and second class, you know, they're still very young, and it didn't rest easy with us that they would just go out the gate and try and find mom or dad or whoever was collecting them. So again, just like the infants, the same method, but except that from 2:30 to 2:40, this again is to try and not to have a whole load congregating at the normal time of 2:40. And we're using those 10 minutes from a set amount of time the schools are allowed for assembly in the mornings and things like that. So we're using it from that, you know. So those children will be picked up by the parents. from the schoolyard. We ask the parents that as soon as they've picked their child up, that they don't hang around again, that they would head away. And from 20 to 3 until, I suppose it possibly will be 10 to 3, each class will be left out individually and they'll go out through different exits. So no class should meet at any one stage on the corridors or together. So we have internal phones in all of the classrooms. So once one class has been completely dismissed, the next teacher would get a call to say, OK, your class are good to go now. So hope this will take a lot of...
It's military planning, to be fair, Che. It really sounds,
it sounds very militaristic, and we don't mean it to sound like that. But unfortunately, I suppose it's not that we want to create a very, very strict regime. We want to create a flow after a while, and we're hoping that after a while that this will become the norm, that we'll all understand it, and that the children will go out in an orderly fashion and with as less stress and as less hype as is possible.
The very last thing I'm going to ask you is, what about the kids that have to travel on school buses?
Yes, Linda, and I suppose this is an area, I suppose, of concern for many, many principals, I'd say all over the country, and for teachers and for parents as well. While we accept completely that children have to travel to school, you know, on the bus, you know, it's not possible for all children to travel by car or to walk, etc., and all that. We accept that, and we accept that parents have no choice in many scenarios but to send their children on the bus. And we're hoping that the bus drivers will follow any measures that are being put in place, which we hope will be followed. But where it becomes a slight difficulty in every school, our school is no different to any school in the country, is that measures are being put in place within the school. They're not perfect, and I'll admit that they won't be perfect, and they won't be perfect in any school because it's an unknown, and it's an area whereby we are all learning. And I will admit that and put my own hand up and say, this is new to all of us. We're all learning, and we just have to be patient with each other and support each other. And if we see gaps or if we see areas for improvement, that we would point it out in as constructive a manner as is possible to each other. But where it becomes a difficulty, Linda, is the fact that on the bus, there are children from different schools, there are children from different families, and there are children from different classes mixing. So it's an area that I suppose really needs to be looked at. The next list on today's agenda for me is to make contact with the bus drivers. And in fairness, one of the bus companies has tried to make contact with me, but I had a very busy day yesterday with meetings, etc. So the next thing on my list today is to make contact and to see, can we come to some solution that will help us all, be it the children, their parents and the staff, help us to see, can we come to some solution that will tie in some way with trying to limit the risk of the spread of COVID-19.
Yeah, and as you said, it's brand new to everyone. We're all learning as we go. And I think it's more important now than ever that we all work together. Parents, teachers, pupils, bus drivers, everybody, we're all in the same boat. We just all need
Absolutely.
To row together.
Absolutely. And again, I'm confident that people will, because one thing I have always seen in you all is a fantastic, you know, a spirit and a great, there's a great spirit of collaboration. And in difficult times, people are very, very good to row in together, to help each other out, to pick each other up. And it's something I've always noticed over the past 18 years that I have been in you all. And I commend the community for that. But obviously, to collaborate, it also requires sacrifices, you know, and we won't all get our own way, and we have to accept that completely, and we can't expect to get our own way. And I think it's extremely important that we would make the sacrifices for the sake of the children, for the sake of ourselves, our own health and the health of our staff, and the sake of all of the families and the parents coming in. And I think, and I'm confident, Linda, and you're a parent in the school yourself as well, I think that, you know, with the collaboration of all of us, we will do our best. We will do our best at a difficult time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I want to thank you most sincerely for taking the time to come in. you got a lot of questions thrown at you there. To be fair, you did. But
not
you
at all,
very
Linda.
Good, very good answers for them. Thank you for and you and all the staff and all the guys down there for all the hard work. And it has been hard work that you've put in over the last few months. And it'll be even harder work. Let's not lie about it in the months to come. But thanks a million for coming
You're
down.
You're very
and talking
welcome,
to me today.
Linda. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. And I hope that this will be in some way helpful in explaining the protocols, I suppose, and the plans that we're hoping to put in place. And again, I want to extend my sincere thanks to the staff, to the students and to the parents. And I just ask of one thing, that we would all collaborate, that we would all be patient, that we would create as less hype and about the whole thing so as to create an atmosphere whereby we learn to live with this and to contend with it, and that it becomes the new normal for us and that we all learn from it. Gurfmagut, Linda.
On that note, Katrina Nirida, Prívida of Gaelscoil Corán here in Yall. Thanks a million.
Gurfmagut, Linda.